Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 192.
And I just started recording as well. I'm just going to do another, like, a backup of this because I'm a nervous Nelly about everything in life. All right. I do great in a global pandemic with my levels of nervousness. Guys, can you hear my fucking I love her baby?
Uh-huh. She sounds adorable.
You can hear her.
Just a little bit, though. I think it's fun.
2, 1.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we stay at home. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I had no idea that a global pandemic was something I wasn't interested in experiencing. There are a lot of things that I had thought about, like extreme mountain climbing or ice picking, that I already decided, like, I don't want to experience that. But global pandemics just wasn't something I really thought much about. So thank you so much, COVID-19, for really expanding my mind. Today, we're going to talk about every angle of hashtag virus life. I don't know if that's a hashtag. It's a really dumb one. Anyway, we'll also talk about the Democratic primaries because democracy is still happening. Today, I have a very exciting panel of sheltered in place panelists. What? We have with us, joining us for the very first time, actually, he's the host and producer of the podcast Family Ghosts. This is such a fascinating podcast where people come in with legends from their family, and then his crack team of investigators figure it all out and tell you a great story about the legends of these people's families. And it's just a fantastic podcast that you should absolutely subscribe to now, especially that you have the time. You guys, it's Sam Dingman. Hey, Sam.
Hello. Greetings, fellow shut-ins.
We are also joined, for the umpteenth time. She's a regular on this podcast. We love her. She's hilarious. You know what else is hilarious? Reductress, the website that she's the editor of. Please welcome to the show, Sarah Popolardo. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, you know. just to give listeners an idea, my baby is downstairs, and she was having a full meltdown, just like right before we started. And then she just stopped. If you guys notice, she literally just stopped her meltdown. Thank you, Rika. So let's just get started. Oh, and by the way, I should also point out, we are all in different locations. We're recording on devices of like that are different. Although we all kind of seem to have pretty hardcore devices, so I think we're gonna sound good. But I don't want to make any promises. But I think we're gonna sound okay. So if you feel that there's a difference in the show, like with the sound quality and stuff like that, it's just because coronavirus. So let's get into it with topic number one. We, like I said, we're actually all recording from New York City. And from what I understand, I don't know, I think shit is a bit more intense here than it is in some other places in the country, which makes sense because of our population density. And in the last, I mean, literally like 2 days, the Trump administration has finally seemed to turn a corner on what it is, what coronavirus is, and the threat that it poses to us. Do you think that he struck the right tone? How was the administration's response struck you?
Confusing.
I mean, I have been, yes, so confusing.
Confusing. Sarah, tell us why it's confusing.
Because I don't know what the response is. There's been 16 independent responses just from Trump alone in the past week, never mind the confusion between Dr. Fauci and the CDC team and Steve Mnuchin saying that there's going to be 20% unemployment, and then his PR person doubling back on that statement. I mean, it's confusing. I personally have found the most comfort in listening to actual leaders, like our governor Cuomo, who did a great interview on The Daily this morning, and heck, even Bill de Blasio.
Tell us about that. Tell me what you thought of that interview. What kind of leadership message were you getting from Cuomo that made you feel good?
Well, you know, it was sobering. He didn't pull any punches, and he talked about exactly what we're likely to face in terms of hospital overages, the financial devastation that the state and the city is going to experience, but also had a hopeful message that this isn't the first time we've been through this. You know, we as a people have survived things like this. And while it's going to be bad, we're doing this all to with the shared goal of continuing life on Earth. And I think that's really good. And that really that really was a great message in the end, which we're not getting from up top at the federal government right now.
I, too, have been so grateful for leaders like Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio for acknowledging in a lot of the public statements they've made. Yes, I know this is an intensely draconian measure that we're putting in place. None of us is doing this willingly. We're not trying to make your lives terrible, but this is as serious as anything we as people in our modern lives have ever confronted, and you should be looking at it as such, and we don't use this language lightly. Like, just the willingness to drop the political song and dance that usually goes along with these kinds of statements has, A, been really welcome, and B, stood in such stark contrast to the fire hose of nonsense coming from behind the podium at the White House, where it's like, oh, well, you know, it'll be over soon. Okay, fine, it won't be over soon, but we're doing a great job with it. Okay, fine, it's way more serious than we realized, and but we're going to send you money, don't worry. Wait, we're not even sure we have a plan for that yet.
Yeah, that has been really confusing, and I think that what's interesting is, like, this thing has really come, like, leadership has come in phases. I mean, I heard the press conference, most of the press conference today, and it started out with, like, we'll just lightly recommend that people work from home. But then you had people like Devin Nunes saying, still go out to restaurants. But then, you know, so then we sort of look to, and this is where the whole notion of leadership is sort of hilarious, because I think once, you know, the NBA canceled its season and South by Southwest canceled, and then Tom Hanks
announced he was infected. That's when we were like, oh, President Tom Hanks is really sending a message to America. You know what I mean? And I think so that was kind of like phase one, where we were being led crazily by the private sector, whose primary interest is money, not health, except for in this instance, they were literally, you know, they were being better leaders, I think, than the Trump administration. And I think we're in New York, I do feel sort of lucky, because I do feel like de Blasio and Cuomo are doing really well. They are in constant contact with the people. We have press conferences that we can look to all the time. They say concrete things. They say them sternly. They don't sugarcoat them, but at the same time, they don't want people to panic. I think Governor Cuomo had a nice moment, which we'll talk about later, where he said, you know, you're not shelter in place. You should go to the park and have a walk and make sure that you're 6 feet apart from anybody else, you know? So there is, so we have been kind of getting that. And I do think that it's sad to get it from local leaders and not from the federal government. And I think it's sad to hear Trump say things like, because he has no personal discipline, say things like, respirators, ventilators, all the equipment, try getting it yourselves. I'm quoting him. Try getting it yourselves. And that is the kind of thing where, like, don't say those things out loud. There's, like, better ways of saying that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that just fucking, it just sounds like people are on their own. And if we really want to operate at scale, and operating at scale doesn't mean the heft of New York State. It means the heft of the federal government, right?
Can I offer something else on that vein too?
Please.
I think one of the things that is maddening at an even deeper level, separate from just the day-to-day terror of living through something like this, is the abject racism and fear-mongering about displacement of blame that Donald Trump has been doing by saying, like, oh, well, it's really the fault of previous administrations for the way they didn't set us up well for this, or calling it the Chinese virus or whatever he said. And in contrast with that, you have de Blasio and Cuomo, who, if you follow New York politics at all, you know they hate each other.
Right.
Those two guys are not friends. The animus between the two of them, it runs very, very deep. And at least so far, it seems like they have been willing to do what, again, leaders are supposed to do, and put that stuff to the side in the name of keeping the citizens that they're responsible for alive.
I think that's absolutely right. And I actually thought the exact same thing when I was watching, like, some press conference, that it does feel like the vitriol with which they normally, like, kind of talk about each other, or about what the state is doing versus what the city's doing and all that stuff, where you can mm-hmm. read between the lines and see the hate. We haven't been seeing that. This thing is so much bigger than that. Let's talk about a little bit the economic piece of this. So Mnuchin came out yesterday. By the way, we're taping on a Wednesday. We normally tape on a Thursday. Today's a Wednesday. Mnuchin came out yesterday saying that that Americans were going to get checks. I don't know what the size of these checks, even as of this morning, I think there were still, I still don't know. So basically, what do you think about just getting a check? And just Americans getting checks.
I think it's great. I mean, I honestly think, and it's been said before, but I am so glad that all of these, what seemed like 3 weeks ago, pie in the sky, liberal progressive policies are now at least being introduced to the public as an option. I myself was saying a month ago, like, Yang's policies are like 50 years in the future. And now suddenly,
I was just going to say Yang.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And here I am like, all right, this is real. So, I don't want to be looking for silver linings everywhere this early in the game, but I do think that it's cool that this is being brought up in a discussion. might happen.
Right. Democratic socialism, you guys. Hey. Is it happening? You know, when I was reading a piece by Andrew Ross Sorkin in the Times today, and he said, because one of the things that's happening is that, like, various industries are coming to the White House and saying, we need a bailout or whatever. We need to discuss a bailout. For example, the airline industry is fucked. The cruise line industry is fucked, right? And what is your initial reaction when you hear that in particular industries might be bailed out?
I mean, I think it's honestly such I'm hesitant to use the word sad because, as Sarah was just saying, it is obviously a very good thing for this policy to go forward in this moment. But zooming out ever so slightly, it feels like such a sad commentary on the way that what it takes to make people in power realize the wisdom of these actually very rational, forward-thinking, progressive mm-hmm. policies. Because one of the most amazing parts about this bailout check thing is that you've seen all these Republican senators, arch-conservative people, who you would think would be dead set against this, saying, yep, obviously under the circumstances, it would make sense to do this. And what they mean by under the circumstances is, oh, all of a sudden, people at my level of income that are in danger of really getting washed out here. My reelection chances are in danger of getting washed out here. So now all of a sudden, this makes sense to me. Once the stock market's in danger, once, you know, industry with a capital I, broadly speaking, is in trouble, then we're willing to consider these things. And so in a way, that's heartening. Like, if you can just get their attention economically, they're willing to consider these ideas. And it gives the lie to the idea that it gives the lie to their typical pushback on this stuff, which is, oh, it's completely impractical. We couldn't possibly.
Right.
It's more just that it's like, well, what? There's nothing in it for me to look out for my fellow human beings until there is.
Right. I think I'll just say really quickly that I think the funny thing about all of this is it's a wake-up call for people who dislike government that, hey, this is what government does. This is why you want it around, right? Like, it's such a huge, fucking, big, giant, in-your-face fucking example of that. You know what I mean? And in that sense, I'm not trying to find silver linings everywhere, but, like, that is a silver lining of, like, this is what it is. This is fucking government. And we felt this way during World War II, during the WPA, during the Great Depression, when we needed government to make some of these choices and to figure it out at scale. We needed government to do that. And that is exactly what's happening here. And the other big learning moment that I think is happening right now, which I think is super hilarious, is that business is also realizing, oh, we can't function as business with a capital B unless there are people around to give us their money. We need for them to have money, and we need for them to be functional and healthy members of society. And that way we can have business. You know what I mean? And so I think hopefully business leaders are like, oh, yeah, bailouts to people are going to trickle up to us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's how it really works. It doesn't work with trickle down. It literally works by trickling up. Sarah.
Yeah. What I was going to say was, even with this paradigm shift, I think a lot of ideological assumptions that we've made in the past are going to have to change, right? Like, even asking the question of whether a bailout is good or bad. That made sense in 2008 when the financial industry was the cause of the financial crisis. Of course, in this case, like, we can't really blame the airlines for this. This was just a shitty thing that happened. And so, like, we have to look at bailouts a little bit differently than the kind of, like, rhetoric we've been using for good reason in the past decade.
Okay, you know what? We're going to end it there because we're going to continue talking about coronavirus. So let's just take a quick break. We'll hear about our sponsors, whom we love. And then when we come back, we'll keep talking about coronavirus.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing, you don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Prose prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level if you think about it. Just it makes common sense. Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at prose.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's prose.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's prose.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So prose.com/fakethenation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app. And I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, you guys. I wanted to ask you guys about the administration's official position on testing. So the current official position on testing is that only people with symptoms should get tested. That we are not doing what South Korea did and has been doing, which is to test everybody. What do you think of that position? Question mark.
How really dumb is it?
Really made it sound like I had more shit to say.
On a scale of fucking dumb to really fucking dumb, how fucking dumb is it?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Where do you stand on that, Sarah?
This is the fucking dumbest thing. This is the number one dumb fucking thing we did, or didn't do, rather, 2 months ago, and are continuing the dumb fucking thing. This is the only thing that would meaningfully stop what is happening without having to shut down our entire economy, and yet we cannot. We are no longer in a position to do that. So, yeah, that's my take.
Sam?
Yeah, I'm just going to disagree with the group and say that I think it's brilliant. No, I'm just kidding. It's obviously one of the things, just to go back to what we were talking about a moment ago about what this says about the role of government in American life, is this also gives the lie to the frequent conservative talking point that government bureaucracy moves so slowly. Like the fact that within the space of a week, we have gone at the federal level from denying there's even really a problem to being ready to send out presumably multiple $1,000 checks to literally every citizen in the entire country.
When you put it like that, it really sounds like something has changed.
Yeah. And it, you know, it really suggests that when it is in the interest of the government to do something that is best for its citizens, it is able to mobilize with incredible speed and pretty remarkable efficiency. And the idea that we can't do that with testing everybody is absurd on its face from a resource standpoint, but it also seems like no thought has been given to the amount of, I think, comfort that it would give people because broad-based testing, the vast majority of people would receive those tests and they would think, great, I'm not sick. And that means that I don't have to be existing in a constant state of panic. Maybe I can pivot my attention to doing some things to help in whatever way healthy people can help in this time. And I can remove this psychological layer of fear of death from what is already an intense time when I'm confined to my home.
You know, my feeling is, you know, because I was thinking like, oh, when they roll out the vaccine, how's that going to go? And then I was like, oh, they should clearly do it by age and like the eldest people get vaccinated first and blah, blah, blah. I was just having like a little thought experiment. And in this case, I wonder if there should also just be we don't necessarily want a bunch of, you know, 60 plus people like walking in the streets to get tested or whatever. But like, I wonder if there's some age component. You know, what we're also seeing is we still maybe don't have the capacity that South Korea has in testing everybody. Like, you know, we still haven't necessarily, you know, I just saw a push notification that the U.S. Army is deploying a ship, or the Navy or whatever, is deploying a ship that's a hospital ship to come to the New York City harbor and do a bunch of testing and have isolation units and all of that stuff there, which is fantastic. But that's like, you know, again, like we're still I think we three as panelists are still just seeing what it is that the federal government is willing to do. We still don't know. And I think if there is really some capacity of testing issue, then maybe it could be, you know, separated by age. I don't know. I'm just talking shit. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I agree that testing would make people feel better. Testing would get the panic out of our systems a little bit more. Testing might free up some people to go volunteer for shit that needs volunteering. I don't know. You know what I mean? There are a lot of benefits to testing that could impact other areas as well. So I hope we do get to the point where we're just testing everybody.
Totally. And this makes me think a little bit about a talking point that comes up oftentimes in the very tragic aftermath of mass shootings, which is there's always this conversation about, well, we need this massive new slate of regulations. And people say, well, it would not be practical to implement that. And it would undoubtedly, you know, end up eroding certain rights and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the typical song and dance. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, the pushback to that is always, great, but let's at least try something. Let's at least see if we can make some amount of progress here. And even if broad-based, you know, universal testing under the circumstances isn't feasible to implement, the idea that we could just exponentially increase the number of people who have access to testing, yeah, even if we can't successfully hit the target of getting everybody tested, would be so, so comforting to people and would help so much with this idea of flattening the curve. And it's so interesting that you raised that point about the push notification about, you know, the they're going to bring a barge, yeah, into the harbor and there'll be improvised isolation chambers there. The signals that we're getting feel very, it's like every day it's like you get this signal from the government like, hey, we have a cool new idea that might be helpful. And it's like, awesome. Are you actually going to be able to implement that? Did you think of it yesterday? Or, you know, is there going to be a website that people can go to and figure out where they're going to get tested? Or is this just a talking point? And the idea that we can't, it seems like these policies are being developed on a sort of off-the-cuff basis without any actual plan for implementation does not do a whole lot for my optimism.
Right. Like for us as citizens, I think that's an excellent point because, I mean, one of the things I think is frustrating about how the administration is handling this, and again, I do want to give credit where credit is due. We have finally heard some solemnity from up top. It's, you know, we're actually hearing some ideas. Like that's good, you know, that they're actually taking this seriously. But I feel like we're getting these fragments of information like Americans are going to get checks. Okay. Like what, who, what do I fill out a PDF and email it to some, like, it's like the way that the PR machine is handling getting this information out, because it's funny because the checks thing almost just creates more panic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without actual real, like, just like, and maybe it doesn't, maybe it makes everybody feel better. Cause they're like, oh, I don't know any of the details, but some sort of a check may be coming to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's just additional crazy uncertainty. So I feel like Where's Olivia Pope? You know what I mean? She needs to fucking get in there and fucking put some discipline on how this administration is handling the spin. Let's talk about everyone's favorite subject, social distancing. How are you? I mean, let's just initial gripes about social distancing. Have you seen resistance to it? Have you yourself been a little resistant to it? What do you feel?
As an introvert, I've been having a great time. however, as late as like last Wednesday, someone went in for a hug, and I was like, "Wow, I didn't know we were still doing that." So that was a little shocking. But I'm all about the social distancing. The only sport I'm playing is tennis now. It's great. Tennis is a great sport for this day and age. But
that's actually a brilliant idea. I did not think about that.
Yeah, don't steal my court. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, personally, I can work with this. You know, I've got my partner who I can at least touch. So I won't like die like a baby or something like that. That's kind of dark. But yeah, I clearly
yeah, thanks for bringing the image of a dead baby into the podcast. That's what we brought you on here for, Sarah. You really served it up.
I'm killing with the jokes today. But yeah, I definitely have noticed that the old friends from high school who are, you know, across the nation are not so into the social distancing thing and are not taking this so seriously. And I don't think there's any amount of yelling one can do online to make them believe that this is what they should be doing.
Can you, Sam, put yourself in the shoes of someone who might be living in a suburb or might be living in a small town and sort of understand, you know, how it is they're looking at this? I think for New Yorkers, we're just like feet away from other people at all times, and not just one other person. We're like, if you break down my apartment wall, there's like a guy sitting on the other side. You know what I mean? We're so close, right, to like people. So I think we are feeling it kind of acutely. And also, you know, our fucking restaurants and bars are closed. Like everything's it's just it's crazy on the streets of New York because it doesn't feel like New York City. But if you're living in a small town, you might have a different perspective. What do you think, Sam?
Absolutely. Well, first, I just want to say, I just had this image of us actually breaking through your wall and finding the person on the other side also recording a podcast.
It's just a block of podcasts happening here.
Oh, no.
In the East Village. I know. It's like the new Corona job.
Right. But yeah, I actually can definitely empathize with someone in that environment who is questioning the wisdom of social distancing. And that's because I think I've been having this odd kind of emotional experience with it, where as somebody who has been training for this moment my entire life as a full-blown hypochondriac, I think big time.
Like,
we're talking about like had trouble changing in high school gym level hypochondriac. I feel like there's like a
solo show in you about just that. At least there's some like poetry, a couple of sonnets.
Yes. If I could convince myself to interact with other humans at a theater. But I think because of that, I have always had a very Mad Max view of what a pandemic would look like, which is the second it was determined that there was some kind of pandemic happening, I'm envisioning myself with like dusty goggles on and like a patchy scarf wrapped around my head and, you know, a right. bindle over my shoulder, like making my way through like the poisoned air.
Right.
And it has been really good for me. You know, I'm being responsible about social distancing, of course, but it has been really good for me at various points throughout this to just go outside and walk around the block a little bit, to take a walk through the park and remind myself that it's not as though all of there's toxicity in every molecule of the air,
right.
And every time the wind blows, you're taking your life in your hands by inhaling. And I think it's much easier for me to do that in New York because there are still people out on the streets. Yeah. There are still delivery trucks coming. It still looks somewhat like normal life.
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
if you're living in more of a remote place, I think it could start to feel apocalyptic much more quickly.
You know, it's in, again, I mentioned that moment from Cuomo about going to the park, but stay 6 feet apart from others. We saw there was like some viral images out of Clearwater, Florida, where a bunch of people were packed on a sandy beach. What are those people thinking? I mean, they also may be a part of the politicization of the virus. And also they're spring breakers who are just like 19 and they don't think it affects them. You know what I mean?
Well, have you guys noticed at all for yourselves how your own political leanings and allegiances have played into who you're willing to listen to in the midst of all this? Because I have to admit, I definitely started taking social distancing much more seriously after AOC tweeted about it. And I thought, now she is somebody who would not say that so definitively unless it was really, really important. I should really heed what she's saying. And I'm sure there are many people, you know, that decision is purely motivated by the fact that I agree with almost all of her policies. And I'm sure that same phenomenon is going on for people at every point on the spectrum.
Yeah. Sarah, did that happen for you?
Yeah, and I was going to say earlier, like, I'm actually kind of glad that Tom Hanks and people like Idris Elba have been announcing that they have coronavirus, because I think that is... It's stupid, but, you know, we're all simple creatures. And, like, if Idris Elba has coronavirus, like, I'm going to take this more seriously, even if it's not true. I don't care. That would be a brilliant misinformation campaign, actually. But, yeah, I mean, and a lot of even more beyond that, like, you know, our broad political ideology may skew more toward freedom and independence rather than, like, the great... sacrificing for the greater good. And you might find a few more of those independence people in Florida on a beach on any given day. It's just going to happen. They're just less likely to make a sacrifice for the greater good. That's
the greater good.
That's where they are. They may not agree with it if you accused them of it. But you know, their actions speak louder than words.
Yeah. By the way, I think, isn't it Idris Elba?
Yeah, sorry. Again, it's
you're doing some weird, like, Scottish pronunciation.
Idris Elba. I don't know where that came from. Again, dead babies, mispronunciations. I'm fine.
And I know I've said this on the podcast before, but I'm going to say it again. But he did one of my favorite songs of 2019. It's called Boasty, and you should fucking listen to it. It's with Idris Elba and Sean Paul, and it's fucking fantastic. And if you did not know that Idris had these kinds of skills, now you're gonna know.
Wait, while we're talking about pronunciation, yes. Can I state an insecurity that I'm currently being consumed by?
Please.
Which is, a moment ago when I was talking about the scarf on my head, I meant to say a patchy scarf, as in a scarf with patches, not a patchy scarf.
Okay.
I just want to make that very clear.
Thank you. Thank you. That would have eaten you alive, and I'm glad you cleared it up for everybody.
Oh, it still will. Don't worry.
Gotcha. But... Yeah. You're still over. You're still done because of it. Okay, this is my last question on this. China, South Korea, and Israel using, like, really sophisticated surveillance data to be able to track people who were infected. Should we be doing the same?
I think it's kind of a moot point at this point. It makes it really easy for me to avoid the ethical question because we're so far behind on just the baseline of testing and having enough equipment that, like, it's a non-issue. I'm kind of glad that I don't have to say, like, should I sacrifice all of my freedom for the safety of everyone, right? Like, that's what we're looking at when we see China. Like, what they're doing is absolutely draconian. Of course it works, but, you know, how can we as a country preserve our constitutional freedoms while also exercising the most unification and organization possible? I don't know. That's my bullshit answer.
Sam, do you have a bullshit answer?
Well, I have a tinfoil hat answer, which is that I guess given our country's record on surveillance, which is to publicly admit that we're doing it well after we have started doing it. Mm. I'm not entirely convinced that there is not some amount of it already happening, which I realize is a sort of a bold statement to make in an environment where people are already plenty paranoid about things. But, you know, it seems like in other countries, there has at least been this sheen of social benefit applied to it, which is that you're getting a pop-up message that, on the one hand, yes, reveals like deeply personal information about a fellow citizen that they might not want revealed, but it's at least ostensibly under the guise of saying, hey, there's a person in your vicinity that has coronavirus. You might want to be careful. I don't trust the United States government to implement any kind of program like that at scale in any sort of effective way. I mean, even when people we probably all are more aligned with are in charge, we still can't figure out how to make a healthcare website work. And the idea of deploying some kind of, I don't know, text message system related to location-based positioning and stuff, it feels like it would tend towards much greater hysteria than it would actually make people feel better.
Right.
I mean,
Trump
Trump almost had Chris Christie run a task force. I don't think he's capable of elaborate mass surveillance that he would like.
Right. I think, again, it is a bull. It's like a forces us not to really reckon with the ethics of it. But I think it's true that it would be the task at hand is already too difficult for the administration that we've got. So we just need them to focus on that. That is provide testing, provide bridge loans or pay money to people and keep everyone alive. That's really what we need to focus on, is keep everyone alive. I wanted to end this segment by asking you guys if there's anything you've come across that people can do. A lot of us are sitting in our homes and we're healthy and we want to figure out how we can help people who might be elderly or, you know, just in other situations that we can help. So did you guys have any ideas?
For me personally, I've just been Venmoing people directly, but I think, you know, at least under the banner of Reductress, or using really any kind of like platform that you have to raise money, do some kind of online entertainment that's donation-based, like through Bandcamp or something like that, and redistributing those funds to freelancers in need is one thing that I feel like I can do. But I'm sure there is a lot more stuff.
And if people are interested, like, you know, I'm a part of the freelance community. I'm also part of the, you know, Screen Actors Guild, the union. And what the Screen Actors Guild is asking is for people to call their representatives and ask them to include, you know, actors and other artists into these financial packages that are coming out. The problem with a lot of the stuff we do, like the three of us, is that it's not covered in any of the institutional, the institutional categories that they normally address, right. Right now they're kind of more looking at people that are a part of the gig economy, and for them that means the Uber and Lyft and all of those folks who desperately need help and need help more than me. But oftentimes what we're kind of not covering is these artists that are, you know, make a living doing it like we do, for whom everything has been canceled. and when I asked earlier, is like, if there's any, you know, how you're handling it, honestly, I was kind of like, I've been sort of like relatively zen about this whole thing, kind of taking it day by day. I had a cancellation this morning though, and it's not like I didn't know more cancellations were coming, but this is just the one cancellation that put me over the fucking edge. Mm. I mean, and I just started like ugly crying, you know, alone in my home. Nobody saw. But I also, you know, when I was speaking to someone else who I have like a professional relationship with, my voice cracked because of a cancellation. You know what I mean? And again, I'm doing so much better than so many Americans or whatever. But I do think, you know, there's artists out there that really, really live paycheck to paycheck. And by paycheck to paycheck, I mean they don't have paychecks. It's like they work on a random gig. They like live on that money for a little while. They wait for the next random gig. You know what I mean? It's not an easy way of living without a pandemic. And then those are also your waiters that don't have jobs. So it's like I think a lot of people in the artist community are just being double hit because their day job as waiters or whatever, those are gone. And then their actual careers are also temporarily on hold. So it's a tough time. So I think that's a really great point, Sarah. Sam, did you have something that you were focusing on?
I would enthusiastically second everything that both of you all just said. I think the visibility around how difficult this is for people who don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks is so important to raise that visibility, especially because at the policy level, federally, and presumably this is going to happen at the state level too, that's the patch they always try to put in place is like, oh, yeah. Well, we just need to cover the fact that you're going to miss two paychecks. And if you work freelance, sometimes you get one paycheck that is enough to cover you for 2 months.
4 months later, you get another paycheck. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's going very quickly to no paychecks for 4 months. And that's really dark. I think the only thing I would add is that I have been trying really hard to use this as a time to call people on the phone. And like whether it's family members or friends who I ordinarily have a more texting relationship with, and actually get in touch with them, ask how they're doing, ask what they need, especially if they live in a place that is not New York City. Mm. Because I think just for my own emotional well-being, it's good for me to know that people are safe. It's good for me to know what the actual scene on the ground in other places is. But beyond just knowing that they're safe and getting some human connection, sometimes those conversations can also lead to a realization like, oh, well, these folks in my community actually started a fund for all the actors who are out of work and they're accepting donations. So if you could send them $15, that would make a really huge difference. And I wouldn't have known about that in any other way than had I just used this as a time to refresh my human connection with people in a time when we can't literally make human connection.
Yeah, and I think that's really good. And then you reminded me, I wanted to clarify what I was saying earlier. SAG-AFTRA is asking people to call their representatives and to let them know to include SAG union members, who all of the TV shows that you're watching, all of those productions have been halted. All of just you know, every comedian's gig has been halted. Everything is done. You know, all of our the livelihood for so many in our community is just really at a standstill. So calling your representative and at least asking for them to consider, you know, the union SAG after union members, that would be fantastic. But I also wanted to point out, check out invisiblehandsdeliver.com. This might just be for New York City. They're delivering groceries for the most at-risk population of COVID-19. That's, you know, the elderly. So please look at that. They may just be New York City, or they may have divisions in other states. In other places, they might be developing in other places. If you look at Facebook, this has actually been, you know, I poo-poo Facebook all the time, but it's actually being really good right now and connecting people. There's in my neighborhood, there's a volunteer page, and I've been able to find some volunteer opportunities on there that mostly involve picking up groceries or picking up free lunches for people who need them. The other thing that I've noticed is that local food banks are really suffering because local food banks get a lot of their volunteers from the elderly, and the elderly are obviously the ones that shouldn't be doing anything right now. So check in with your local food bank and see what kind of help they need. If you're healthy and you can lend a hand and there's a safe way to do it, please consider doing it. Also, there's an organization called Fuji's Family, and this is still in the infant stages, but they might be looking for people to translate. They basically provide food for children of refugee families. And a lot of those families don't read and they don't speak English. And so they're looking for people to translate a lot of these press conferences we're getting, or sum up these press conferences into those languages. So I just saw a post about this. I don't know at what stage this is in. So maybe check out Fuji Family, their website. Fuji's Family, that's the website. And also, is there, and you know, just in terms of like, I wonder if there's some sort of phone banking for like checking in on elderly, you know what I mean, in your neighborhood. If there isn't, I wish there was one. Maybe the people of Fake the Nation know of something and they can let me know. Because that seems like, I don't know. Sometimes one of the things that concerned me, I have an aunt in Iran who's in long-term care and she's very isolated, and it just scares the shit out of me because her isolation is, something that someone in long-term care is handling very with great difficulty. And so all of those things, guys, people of Fake the Nation, let me know whatever your ideas are. Please tell me. I will share them on in the internet, and then I will also mention them on the show. I'll just do what I can. All right. Guys, let's move on to topic number three. Tuesday saw Florida, Illinois, and Arizona primaries, all of which Joe Biden won. Ohio postponed their primary because of health concerns. Other states were talking about postponing their primaries. Before we get into those, what did you make of Biden's wins on Tuesday?
Pretty expected. there's no real big surprises at this point. I think, as much as I support Bernie and his policies, there's no more room for the kind of magical thinking that, anyone other than Biden is going to take this nomination. And I mean, I personally am just hoping that he continues to adopt more progressive policies, like taking on Warren's bankruptcy bill, Bernie's college plan, and other things like that.
Yeah, actually, I was really heartened by that because we saw in the debates, I meant that they pointed out that he took on Elizabeth Warren's bankruptcy plan, and my joke for that was that she's the person you cheat on in class, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, cheat on her some more, cheat from her some more, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, copy that test, because she's got a lot of great ideas, and so it was really hard. And I also, and I said this last week, but it kind of speaks to how nimble he is. He is not an ideological purist, you know? He is willing to move and sway with what people are siding with. Sam, what do you think of these wins?
Yeah, I also was not terribly surprised by Biden's victories, and am also dismayed, but coming to terms with the fact that it seems pretty inevitable that he's going to be the nominee. But in addition to what you were saying about these very positive signs of malleability in the progressive direction that he has shown over recent weeks. Another thing that has been exciting to me, even though it was verging on irresponsible from a health standpoint, is that under the circumstances, it seems like the turnout in the primaries was still fairly impressive.
Yeah.
Both the early voting and people showing up. And as we know so well, high turnout benefits Democrats.
Yeah.
And we had been seeing that trend definitively in the pre-coronavirus primaries, but the fact that those trends held under the circumstances is sort of uncanny.
Yeah.
And to me suggests that if there is this groundswell of support behind Joe Biden, and that is our best chance to get policies like free public college and bankruptcy reform, and can lead to things like him publicly declaring in a debate before the primary is even over that he will pick a female vice presidential candidate.
What'd you think of that moment?
It was complicated, I suppose. I mean,
And sorry for listeners, for listeners who might not know what we're talking about. He said in the last debate that he would pick a black woman to be on the Supreme Court. And he added that he would pick a woman for sure to be his running mate. They then asked Bernie if he would do the same. And Bernie sort of said, basically, yes, but it's more important for me that that person be a progressive woman. So sorry, continue, Sam.
Oh, well, I mean, it was an odd moment to watch because I certainly, as somebody who supported Elizabeth Warren all through the primaries until she dropped out, it raised my hopes that perhaps she could still find her way onto the ticket, even if it's not in the way that I would have preferred it to be. It is also slightly weird for, I suppose, Joe Biden to just say, it will be a woman in the sense that it seemed like he was trying to get points for
right
feminism without actually investing in
feminist principles.
Feminist principles, exactly. But it did seem like for someone of his generation, it was more than perhaps I would have expected in that moment and is something that I was hoping for him to do anyway were he to become the nominee. So I think it was net positive, even if there were some uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's funny because I was like, no shit, motherfucker. You better be getting a fucking running mate who's a woman. Like, that's not even, that hasn't even been a question for me. Like, of course, you're 500 years old and you're a fucking old white guy. Like, obviously, you need to have a, but I was like, I mean, thanks for clarifying.
Right. This is like the equivalent of like having a shitty husband being like, I put the clothes in the dryer. Where's my right. applause? Like, yes,
exactly. Were you moved at all by that, Sarah? Did it change? I mean, did it make you feel better? I'm imagining you're not a Biden person to begin with, are you?
Not a huge fan, but you know, I'm working with it. I'm malleable.
Right. No, exactly. You're building the fire.
No, I mean, of course. It's just like, of course, you should choose a woman. And the fact that we're still living in a world where just saying that can get applause pisses me off to no end.
I mean, there technically wasn't applause because it was empty audience.
Right. Well, you know, pundit
applause. But you're talking about metaphorical applause.
Metaphorical applause.
All of us in our basement bunkers were clapping.
Yeah.
When like the actual nuts and bolts of it is like, well, depending on which woman he does choose, which my guess would be Kamala or Elizabeth Warren, that could mean two very different things. Both are good, but you know, to pretend like...
But they signify something different.
Exactly. And I think Bernie, you know, answered pretty fairly considering it was a pretty off-guard question for him.
Yeah. Well, it also indicated maybe that he... It sounds like Biden has vetted a list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And maybe here's my big question for you guys, and it breaks my heart to even ask it. Do you think Bernie should drop out of the race?
At this point, yes. I'm really glad he was in that debate. I think that it was, you know, his last chance at having a public forum to explain his policies. But this feels like the point where it's time to bow out. The writing's on the wall for him. So anything beyond this would really, I think, do him and his policies a disservice more than anything.
Sam?
I definitely recognize that. The validity of that, of course. I perhaps naively would like to see him stay in for just a little while longer, just because it does seem like his continued presence and the importance to Joe Biden's eventual victory of getting Bernie's coalition on board with Biden as a nominee is so vital. And I wonder if there's any more progressive juice to be squeezed out of Biden before Bernie concedes.
Yeah.
If it's possible to get him to sign on to, excuse me, if it's possible to get him to sign
fucking
on to just a couple
more. Coughing during
a
goddamn global pandemic on the mic, you guys. That's what just happened. All right.
Oh, no.
Now we all have it.
Oh, no.
Just wait till the podcasting virus comes out. We're all fucked.
Yes.
Sorry, Sam. You were trying to make a point before your audible coughing got in the way.
Before I was somehow infected through Zoom conference call. No, I just, you know, I do wonder if there's any further that Biden can be pushed in the progressive direction by virtue of Bernie's continued presence in the race. Not for an extremely protracted period of time, because it, you know, I do feel like ultimately it is going to be really important for everybody to unify behind, presumably, Biden as the nominee. But it does seem like this Bernie supporters are recalcitrant enough and resistant enough that Bernie has a bit more leverage left in the tank to try to get some formal commitments from Biden before he formally bows out, particularly given the fact that the attention on the primary has been so decreased recently.
Ugh, yeah.
I think it gives Bernie one or two more cards to play before he folds.
You guys, a couple of things. I mean, you guys said different things, but I agree with both of you. Opposite things in some ways. But I think you're right. Like at this point, the statistical improbability, all that shit. Again, I've been disenfranchised as a New York voter. Fuck this system. I've been saying that for like several months. I will continue to say that. Let us fix the primary process. I'll also mention that Bernie raised $2 million, I think, last weekend. He's got still some money to burn. So that could keep him in the race, just that one fact alone. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, Sam, that it was the debate felt exciting because it felt like Biden knew he had to make concessions, you know, and he knew he had to move to the left. I would love to see is like a nice sit down chat between Biden and Bernie that's just fucking straight up televised, where Bernie's like, this is what I want from you. You know what I mean? Add this and this and this to the official Democratic platform at the convention. And I need to know who your running mate is. And nope, sorry, that one, whoever that is too moderate, and you need to show me another name, you know, or whatever. And I think I would love to just see that play out.
That'd be good TV.
Can I get a glimpse into the backroom dealings of these two old men as they eat their corned beef sandwiches? You know what I mean?
Jowls flapping and hands waving.
Jowls flapping in the wind is the title of this podcast. all right, you guys. People of Fake the Nation, you think Bernie should drop out? I'm so sad because I was going to use my partially disenfranchised vote of this narrowed down field to vote for him because I couldn't vote for E-dubs. So anyways, let me know what you think. This has been the first ever episode of Fake the Nation in the midst of a global pandemic, you guys. Woo! We fucking did it.
Yeah.
All right.
Take off your top.
Yeah, so that is the end of the... That is the end of the episode. How do you feel?
Well, I clearly became infected with coronavirus in the course of it. So. Other than that, I feel great. But
thank you guys for sharing your ideas on what people can do and for your thoughts on all of this. And we're going to keep talking about what we need to talk about here on Fake the Nation. I'm so curious to know what you guys are thinking, feeling, what you're doing. If you're in this audience, then you probably are like one of those fans of being a part of the problem. I mean, no, the opposite. being a part of the solution. So I'm so interested to hear what your solutions are. Even if they're like dumb shit, because by the way, guys, one of my first, I think, official coronavirus home activities was to bake a brisket. And just to give you an idea of what a big deal that was for me, the last like 10 things I baked were salads. You know what I'm saying? So like I don't know anything about cooking. And so for me to like make brisket was a really, was a feat. So you can also share with me the dumb shit that you might be doing, like brisket. Sarah, I want for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the stuff that you do and have some entertainment they can look at during these troubled times. Where do they do that?
You can find me on the Twitters and the Instagrams at yourpapalardo. Take a look at reductress.com. Also, if you're bored, we have a new card game that just came out. You can purchase it wherever those are sold or at shop.reductress.com.
I love that. I didn't know you guys came out with a card game.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Sam, where do people get all the stuff that you have to offer?
Well, I would love for folks to check out Family Ghosts, my podcast. It is on all of the podcast players, your Apple Podcasts, your Spotify's, your CastBox. That last one sounds like I just made up a podcast player, but that is a real podcast player. and if I may, I humbly think that Family Ghosts is really great quarantine listening. The episodes are each about 45 minutes to an hour long, and it's long-form storytelling. If you are somebody who likes the sort of propulsive and immersive nature of true crime but doesn't like their storytelling to be super exploitive and murdery, I think we have something nice to offer you in our feed.
I heartily agree with that, because I oscillate between wanting to know all the news in the world to wanting to have no news at all whatsoever, and just wanting to hear some sort of story that'll take me out of what I'm thinking into another realm. And it sounds like Family Ghost Stories is exactly that.
Yes, that is our hope, at least.
All right, you guys. And you know where to find me and all of the internet things. Nagin Farsad on all of your stuffs. And, what I really want you to do, though, is don't forget to sign up for Bonus the Nation. We have new episodes coming out. It's great. It's fun. It's has nothing to do with coronavirus. And it's a great way to support this particular show in this crazy time. So if you have it in you to sign up for Stitcher Premium and listen to Bonus the Nation episodes, we would love that. All right. What I really want to do is thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. They are working so hard from their respective perches, and I thank them so much. That's our producer, Anita Flores, our audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music. Lily Fleshler helps out with research. Jared O'Connell helped figure out this whole technical ridiculousness that we're now experiencing, and he's so expert and brilliant at doing it. So thank you to Jared. And listeners, we love hearing from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981 or drop us a line at commentsatfakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because it really helps people find the show. You guys, till next week, thank you and good day.